Entry number 2, Guinea Pig F. More than 100 years before Fuller ever glued his first newspaper clipping, Benjamin Franklin was figuring out how best to preserve his own life. His answer? Turn himself into a literary character. Assistant producer Dan Hirsch learns the story of our lovable founding father as he himself wrote it.
7. Sincerity. Use no hurtful deceit. Think innocently and justly. And if you speak, speak accordingly.
Franklin begins writing an autobiography in 1771, and he's in England at the time. And he's there, he goes over to take care of some Pennsylvania business, but he winds up staying on there as he's dealing with, he's kind of acting as an ambassador as the events that are going to lead to the revolution are starting to roll on. But while he's there, he decides to take on this project of writing down this memoir. He's directing it to his son. It starts, in fact, with the line, "Dear son," is written as a letter. So he's addressing it to his son and saying to the son, "I thought you might like to have these events of my life, in part because they might serve as a model to you sometime. You might find yourself in this situation where they'd be suitable to imitate." So that's the first part he's doing in 1771.
"Dear son, I have ever had a pleasure in obtaining any little anecdotes of my ancestors. You may remember the inquiries I made among the remains of my relations when you were with me in England, and the journey I took for that purpose. Now, imagining it may be equally agreeable to you to know the circumstances of my life, many of which you are yet unacquainted with, and expecting a week's uninterrupted leisure in my present country retirement, I sit down to write them for you."
He breaks off because the revolution intervenes and he is interested in other things. But he's in France in 1784, and he gets these letters from two friends of his, Abel James and Benjamin Vaughan, urging him to continue. They have discovered that this memoir exists, and they urge him to continue writing because they think he'd be such a great role model for the youth of what's now the U.S., the new nation. And so that's where the second part comes in. He says he writes it on the advice and encouragement of these two correspondents, and that's 1784.
"Your history is so remarkable that if you do not give it, somebody else will certainly give it, and perhaps so as nearly to do as much harm as your own management of the thing might do good. But your biography will not merely teach self-education, but the education of the wise man. Show them, sir, how much is to be done, both to sons and fathers, and invite them all, wise men, to become like yourself, and other men to become wise."
The writers of the letters that he includes at the beginning of part two, they want Franklin to keep writing because they think that he's this model of industry and frugality and temperance. But part what they're missing is that what he might be a role model of is manipulating surfaces and appearances. In other words, what is it that he models? Is it character in the old-fashioned sense of moral substance, or is it character in the sense of putting up a public front, of a surface appearance, of role-playing, like character in a book, like a flat printed character on a page? What Franklin, I think, realizes coming out of all of his experience with print, and you have to realize, Franklin knows print. He was apprenticed to his brother at 12. His brother is a printer in Boston. He's an apprentice there. And his whole life, his main business is as a printer. And what he knows is that through the manipulation of surface characters, one can gain credit. These two terms are always together in Franklin's autobiography, character and credit, character and credit. That you can solicit credit, belief, and faith, and maybe more financial benefits by putting up a good character.
"In order to secure my credit and character as a tradesman, I took care not only to be in reality industrious and frugal, but to avoid all appearances of the contrary. I dressed plainly, I was seen at no places of idle diversion, I never went out of fishing or shooting. Thus being esteemed an industrious, thriving young man, and paying daily for what I bought, the merchants who imported stationery solicited my custom. Others proposed supplying me with books, and I went on swimmingly."
You might suggest that in the autobiography he's doing the same thing. He's soliciting credit through manipulation of character, and characters on the page, and through painting his character in a particular way. You know, Franklin understands that writing, that print, can have serious effects in the creation of self or reputation, which for Franklin maybe they're the self-same thing. And print does, to him, offer opportunities to remake the self. And you see this in multiple moments, in multiple ways. First off, print allows you to make yourself into new characters. And Franklin, throughout the autobiography, talks about these instances where he writes himself into new characters. Silence Do-Good. His first appearance in print is as Mrs. Silence Do-Good. He also does it with Poor Richard, the Poor Richard's Almanac.
In 1732, I first published my almanac under the name of Richard Saunders. It was continued by me about 25 years, commonly called Poor Richard's Almanac. I endeavored to make it both entertaining and useful, and it accordingly came to be in such demand that I reaped considerable profit from it, vending annually near 10,000.
There are famous moments in it where Franklin describes his life in textual terms. And you do get the sense of one's life as being a book. It's present from the very beginning of the autobiography.
Were it offered to my choice, I should have no objection to a repetition of the same life from its beginning, only asking the advantage authors have in a second edition to correct some faults of the first. So would I, if I might. Besides correcting the faults, change some sinister accidents and events of it for other more favorable. But though this were denied, I should still accept the offer. However, since such a repetition is not to be expected, the thing most like living one's life over again seems to be a recollection of that life. And to make that recollection more durable as possible, the putting it down in writing.
I think he sees print in two ways on this. Print as a model of the idea that you can a character in the sense of letter formation, right? That you can perfect your characters. You know, he even talks sometimes about copying out letters to make them, to do a better job with handwriting. That there's a model here of coming into a textual self or a textual perfection, a formal perfection of character.
It was about that time that I conceived of the bold and arduous project of arriving at moral perfection. I wished to live without committing any fault at any time. I made a little book in which I allotted a page for each of the virtues. I ruled each page with red ink so as to have 7 columns, one for each day of the week. I might mark a little black spot for every fault I found upon examination to have been committed respecting virtue upon that day. These names of virtues with their precepts were 1. Temperance. Eat not to dullness, drink not to elevation. 2. Silence. Speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversation. 4. Resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve. 6. Industry. Lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions. 10. Cleanliness. Tolerate no uncleanness in body, clothes, or habitation. 12. Chastity. Rarely use venery, but for health or offspring. Never to dullness, weakness, or the injury of your own or another's peace or reputation. 13. Humility. Imitate Jesus and Socrates.
The odd thing, or one of the odd things about the autobiography, is that if we want to see Franklin as devoted to constructing his character in print, or to establishing his character in his own text, well, why does he never finish the autobiography, much less publish it? He's still writing, as I say, on his deathbed, and you have to ask why. Here's this man, he's able to take on and complete an almost superhuman number of tasks in his life, in different veins as well. He's a prolifically productive person, but he won't finish his autobiography. Why is that? One possibility that you could raise is, if he does see his life as so intimately tied into text, to finish the autobiography is equivalent to dying. And you could ask, is it that he too well appreciates the power of print that makes him hesitate at the thought of finishing the autobiography? Is this his reluctance to commit himself to the final durable version of himself, to fix himself in this final character form? It's all well and good when it's Silence Do-Good or Poor Richard, but to say this is Ben Franklin for him, to commit himself to that textual character, I think perhaps that's what happens, why he doesn't finish it.
By my rambling digressions, I perceive myself to be grown old. I used to write more methodically. But one does not dress for private company as for a public ball. 'Tis perhaps only negligence. To return, I continued thus employed in my father's business for 2 years. That is, till I was 12 years old. And my brother John, who was bred to that business, having left me.